This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner, Wes Durham, is back from Chapel Hill, rubbing elbows with former commissioners, current commissioners, and the Greensboro Merchandise Association. What was that? What was that group again?
The official title, Guilford Merchant Association.
Those guys.
Had a great time.
The GMAs.
Yeah, it was kind of a virtual deal. So we did that yesterday, and glad to be back with you in our new setup. And it's a big day, Pac. We got a lot of great guests on this show, but let me tell you, it's a big day. Because today, my only children, Will and Emily Durham, turn 22 years old today.
Chuck the deuces. 2-2. Mm-hmm. There they are.
Check up. There they are. They're on the set this week. This is not a current photo, obviously. Back when they were a little younger. We have more photos of when they were younger. But happy birthday, Will and Emily. There they are in the Keenan press box. And I'm showing young pictures on purpose because this really frustrates them. They're like, well, Dad! So, there you go.
Awesome.
But Will and Emily are 22. Emily lives in D.C. Gainfully employed, PAC, which, as you know, is the goal of every American parent with their child.
Oh, the parent, yes. No, it's not the goal of every American worker. That is to be suspended with pay.
No.
That's the goal of every American worker.
That's it. American parent is to have their child gainfully employed, is it not?
Well, the goal of every American parent is to be off the payroll. I think that's the cut right to the chase, to be off the payroll. If you can get off the payroll, then life is good. Everybody's successful.
That's it. So Emily lives in D.C. Happy birthday, Emily. Love you. And Will Durham graduates in less than a month from Kennesaw State University with a degree in business.
Nice.
And keeping our fingers crossed that he will be a part of someone's Division I basketball program next year in a graduate assistant role.
So very cool.
Hopeful and optimistic. So
excellent.
There we go.
Excellent, excellent. But, happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate that. They're wonderful and very blessed. So, looking forward to seeing Will today and talk to Emily because she's in D.C., but she'll be here for Will's graduation. So it all works out great, doesn't it?
Family affair. Go. It's nothing better.
There you go.
All right. Before we get to business at hand, Commissioner Phillips, Commissioner Swofford, how the boys doing?
Yeah.
Everybody good?
Doing well. John Swofford, I think, has found this retirement might be to his liking. You know, I had a great visit with him yesterday at the conference office in Greensboro, and it was an interesting conversation, and I think it was interesting in the light that, first of all, Jim Phillips' first 70-some days on the job, Mark, and you and I have talked about this, have been a whirlwind, right? Mm-hmm. Just unbelievable how fast time will go and all the things that he's trying to do. He is in the early stages of what he told you and I he was going to do, and that was a listening tour to each of the institutions to meet with presidents and athletic directors individually and other staff folks as well. I think he said he's got three schools done. His fourth one is later this week. The other thing that I will tell you is there is no doubt, and you have said this, and Commissioner Phillips echoed it yesterday in our visit, that we are on the verge of a changing landscape in college athletics. I mean, we kind of talk about it. I think we talk about it to a point where people think we're just kind of giving it lip service. But you and I both know it is a major, major deal when it comes to the way we're going to look at college athletics going forward. He recognizes that. The other thing, too, that came from our visit that I found interesting and actually very welcoming is the fact that Jim Phillips points out that one of the benefits in his first 75 days has been the collaboration of all levels of the ACC, not only within their building, the conference office, and that kind of thing, but the things that happened in the last year that you and I've talked about with the athletic directors and the SWAs and the faculty reps and medical advisory group and presidents and things like that, Jim Phillips feels like that's a real positive going forward for the ACC, and he can already sense that that teamwork, if you will, on certain issues. And I think that's a big positive, especially given, potentially some of the changes that we're going to face.
Well, one of the things that he said when he was with us, and I thought was really important,
mm-hmm.
Was that he said, you know what, I want to listen. And I have told you this many times before. That is a trained art, to be a really good listener. And I think given Jim's background, obviously all the athletic directors knew about him when he was at Northwestern. But, you know, for him to go on each campus and listen to, hey, here are the needs. Here are the things that are working. Here are the things that are not working. Here's where we need help in. And he needs to take as much inventory as possible before he comes down and says, all right, here is our plan of action. And when he made that comment to us whenever he joined us two months ago, I thought that was really important when he said that, because that told me that, hey, you know what? I don't have all the answers, but you know what? We're going to get to work. But before we figure out and try to solve problems, let's find out what the problems are at each institution. And again, what may be a problem at Georgia Tech may be totally different at Syracuse. What works at Miami doesn't work at Virginia Tech. And you try to, as a commissioner, you try to put everybody together. But the fact that he made that statement to you yesterday about everybody working hand in hand, to me, is a great sign. It doesn't mean that you've solved mm-hmm. anything, but that is how you go about business in solving problems one way or the other. So, I've not met him yet. We've had a chance to talk to him a couple times on radio and here on TV. I think the league's in good hands. I think this guy understands that, hey, we're going through a transition, and let's best put ourselves in that position, and how do we get there? I think the emphasis of football makes a ton of sense, because football right now is driving everything. You see the story yesterday about Virginia Tech in terms of their capital campaign, and they want to raise $400 million
Absolutely.
In fundraising, and what they're going to give back to, whether it be basketball, football facilities, everything else, getting your family together in terms of, hey, we need everybody on board. You lose $47 million in a projected year with a fiscal year, and everybody's taking a hit given this pandemic. Hey, you need everybody rowing in the same direction. That's true on campuses. That's mm-hmm. also true in your conference office. So the fact that Jim Phillips, the new commissioner, has openly said, I'm going to go visit everybody and listen, to me, is a great, mm-hmm. great sign. That's a sign of leadership.
Yeah, no question. I think it's a valuable piece in the early days of his administration. And we're looking forward to more visits with him. He likes coming on with us so far, so that's a good sign, right? We're looking forward to more visits with Commissioner Phillips.
Is that a good sign for the commissioner or for us? you need to define that statement.
I said he liked coming on with us so far.
I said
he liked coming on so far.
Yeah, right.
I think he understands this vehicle, the ACC network,
I
think that's important too.
Mm-hmm.
I also look at kind of the future of where we're going, and there are other – And we all know the revenue is the revenue. We got to find that's one of the priorities, I think, that as we move forward in the ACC, you're going to see more marketing and more exposure for this league on a lot of different platforms, and that's certainly a critical nature to the games that are being played. But I think you bring up a good point, Pac. It's important to be – if you're going to be a Boston College fan, Pittsburgh fan, Virginia Tech fan, Virginia State, Duke, Carolina Wake, up and down the footprint here – it's important to be a fan this year. It's important to go to the games, be a part of it, do those things that you become accustomed to do. You go to typically three, try to make it to four, those type things, if it's possible. I think you're right. I think that's a big part of 2021 and the athletic season we're going to embark on in the fall.
I just did a radio show last week on SiriusXM 84 off campus, 4 to 7 Eastern mm-hmm. time. And the question, our goofball question, it really wasn't so much the goofball question. It was a serious question. And that is, are you comfortable as a fan today, middle of April, are you comfortable as a fan in making plans for the fall? That was the question. And it was, and I said, I'm going to ask this same exact question in June on the radio show and compare notes in terms of the percentage of people and where you call. We had callers from 22 different states, which I thought was important. 22 different states.
Yep.
And 95% of the people that called into the show said, it's either a green light, you're good to go. Yellow, you're cautious, not sure. Red, no way. 95% of the callers were green light. Let's go. 22 different states called in that day. Callers from that state. Now, I'm going to ask that same question in June. Hopefully the vaccine continues to pick up momentum. Hopefully we continue to be smart, wearing masks, social distance, wash your hands. You've heard it nonstop now for 14 months. And just see where we go. But I think you're right, Wes. It is imperative that I don't care who you root for. If you do have some disposable income, you know what? Spend a weekend at a college football stadium if you can. You know, go to a baseball game. Go support women's track and field. Whatever it is. We've got to generate the economy again for college athletic departments. You've got to create revenue stream. Everybody, I don't care how much money you raise. You can be University of Texas or Texas A&M with over $200 million normally in revenue. Everybody got hit. I mean hit. And so the quicker we can stimulate the economy again, people tailgate, you know, bring your buddies, buy some tickets, do whatever the case may be, whatever you can afford. I mean, don't listen, if you can't afford it, that's we get it. A lot of folks have lost their jobs. A lot of folks still uncomfortable going out in society. I get it. Nobody's forcing it on you. But if you've got it and you're in the mood, man, do it. Because it really is going to be imperative for all of us to kind of get back and start rejuvenating the economy again.
Yeah. So great visit with Commissioner Swofford and Commissioner Phillips. And thanks to the folks at the Guilford Merchants Association and the ACC for asking me to be a part of it. A couple of things to clean up from yesterday. Number one, did we ever get any response at all from President Jim Clements at Clemson on your offer as a future commencement speaker?
Yes, I will read it to you. I told you he's going to respond. So I basically laid out there to him yesterday I'll just read it right. Here's what I wrote him yesterday during the show. If you remember, I was actually texting him while you were talking.
Yeah, it was during the show.
I said,
when we were talking about Russell Wilson doing NC State, you decided that you were going to engage President Jim Clements at Clemson to one day potentially deliver the commencement address at your alma mater.
And I told him, you know, whatever the fees that they write, you know, I don't want a dime. I'll put it right back to the school. Again, generate economy. That's what we got to do. And so,
you're going to give it to Ipti.
Whatever you want. Whatever Clemson wants to do. I don't want the dollar. I don't want it.
Right. I got you.
Put it my name or Amy's name or the girl's name, Gigi and Emmy. They're graduates, but I don't want a dime. So I sent him that, and here was his response. He responded to me last night. He said, "You would be awesome!" Exclamation, 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 exclamation. And then he asked me about the ceremony coming up here in a couple of weeks with Emerson and if he could be of help. And I said, you know, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. I said, but that is an open invitation beginning in 22 and beyond. If Clemson University wants to use and have me as a commencement speaker, I'm in. And if you say no, no harm, no foul. Down the road we go. Not going to cost you dime.
They didn't say no. They did not say no.
The president of the institution said you would be awesome. But that was exactly what he wrote.
So to qualify where we're going to leave this till further notice.
Ball's in his court.
We're going to go to one of the great American motion pictures, Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance.
No, listen.
Right?
It is nothing more than an offer. And if Clemson wants to take advantage of it, great. If they don't, it's no, I got 1,000 things I can do. So I'm there for it.
All right. Okay.
Not going to cost them a dime. Not even going to charge them ESPN 20 cents a mile on the Ford F-150 to drive down there. I'm not going to charge you anything. It's God's country down there.
All right. Another development from yesterday's show. Apparently, you may get an egg custard.
Miss Jean. God from Miss Jean. Her. I talked to her Apparently,
I'm going to emphasize you may get an egg custard.
What does that mean?
Didn't say you would. You may. You're on the list. Your plea was noted yesterday. Let's put
Miss
it this
Jean,
way
she's
by
the
my
greatest.
Mom.
Miss Jean's awesome.
She's already talked to my brother about potentially stopping in Charlotte on the way to Georgia in early May to hand you your egg custard.
Perfect. I tell you what, she doesn't even have to come to the house if she doesn't want. I'll meet her on the I-85 Billy Graham exit, right on her way down to Georgia. All she's got to do is get out of the car, give her a big hug, slide her a 20 on the side for a little work there, take my egg custard and eat it on the way home. Me and the dogs. Well, then we'll have it be. It'll be done by the time we get back to the house.
There you go. All right. One final note before we get to our first time out. I did get some additional news yesterday in Greensboro that I wanted to share with you, because a gentleman who appeared with us on radio, but I don't think's ever been with us on television, a conference official, had quite a moment on Friday, I understand, and I wanted to share this with you.
Who was it?
Paul Brazo.
Oh, he's never been on.
Paul Brazo.
Never been on.
Senior Associate Commissioner of Men's Basketball of the Atlantic Coast Conference PAC on Friday afternoon, apparently, at the Greensboro Country Club, posted an ace.
Nice. Way to go, Paul. You know what that tells me?
And reports are, it was a good shot.
No, of course they
are. It was a good shot.
Anytime you put the one.
Well, that's kind of what I thought.
I'll say this, though.
No, that's that.
I'll just say this. Any conference executive playing golf and basketball, given what we're doing right now, I mean, we got dudes transferring and averaged 1 point a game yesterday, transferring. I would say any executive that's tied into college basketball right now, that you got time to play golf. Yeah. I tell you what, you better roll up your sleeves, college basketball. We got, I'm going to tell you, we are all tied into this. We have a lot of work to do in college basketball. This transfer portal, name, image, and likeness. Yeah. I mean, the ace is cool. Great. Awesome. But we got to get to work in basketball. Right. We got issues, man. Issues.
Yeah.
But congrats on the ace, Paul. Excellent.
So, Brazo, Paul, congratulations.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. That guy's voice is awesome. All right, 844-SAY-ACCN, the number. Miss Jean, appreciate that very much. Can't wait to indulge in my very first egg custard pie.
No. You might get the egg custard.
No, I'm getting that. Me and Miss Jean.
I didn't say you would.
Me and Miss Jean are tight. She likes me.
Okay.
Right there has got breakfast. That's called breakfast.
Oh, man.
That's
Stop.
Right there.
Let's get to the show.
You know, and I want one about that size, because on my monitor, that looks like the size of a basketball. That's what I want. That's a slice. That's breakfast. Me and the boys. The boys can have the crust. I'm eating everything else. Never had one before. Miss Jean's would be the best ever. Ever. All right. Let's get serious a second.
All right.
Our next topic is a problem. And it's the real world. And again, student athletes have more power and control than ever before. And that has never been more apparent than a thing called the transfer portal. And we're going to give you some numbers from both football and basketball here. And if you haven't been paying attention, you've been hearing us talk about it, but you're really not into it. I get it. Totally understand. But here are the real numbers. All right. Here's some numbers that your eyeballs are going to pop out of your head. Wes, we're going to start with hoops. And every single day you read about somebody that says, hey, I'm entering the transfer portal, whether they're a player, they're on the bench, whatever. I'm out of here. Catch you later. Here are the numbers from verbal commits. That's our source. Since 2019. Right. Now, listen, it's April of 21. It's not that long ago. Look at the numbers across the board here. And if you think, hey, man, the ACC is getting hit, this is everybody getting hit.
Every school's on here.
I mean, everybody in the world is getting hit. Here we go.
It's amazing. The numbers are just amazing. I mean, you got three in double figures. Remember, at one point this year, we had three schools, and I'd have looked at it this week, the list that Jeff Goodman has of specific players. But at one point in the last couple of weeks, we had three schools with six or more guys in the portal pack.
Right. I know it.
In men's basketball.
Goofy.
Last time I checked, that's half the scholarships. Right.
How do you put together a team? I mean, it is totally different universe than it was two, three, four, five years ago. And, you know, we've not talked to Roy Williams. And I'd love to put him on Truth Serum and put him in a room and just ask him a couple questions about the change of the landscape and its impact on his decision. And I know he's enjoying life and he's earned it. He's an incredible guy, incredible coach. But this is just a different way of putting together a team now. And You got to pick and mix and match, and hopefully you recruit well with high school players. Again, I worry about the trickle down to the high schools. Those kids are going, hey, wait a minute. A team can all of a sudden bring in a guy who's a junior averaging 13 a game. It's basically a grown man that's played and got experience. And that maybe hurts a kid coming out of high school that says, hey, you know, I'm ready to sign. You develop me after 2 or 3 years. I can be that guy. Well, you can go be that guy tonight by going and getting somebody from the Ivy League or a Big Ten transfer or an SEC transfer, whatever the case may be, or even within your own league, as far as the ACC is concerned. We've seen that already happen. It's a crazy world.
Yeah, and we're going to show you the football numbers, but here's the thing I worry about with basketball, and I'll kind of jump around here a little bit. Basketball's 13 scholarship guys. They don't wear helmets. You get to know who they are. You get to attach yourself because you see them play and you know specifically. Football's 85 scholarships. You have your favorite players. You have a guy maybe. You know who they are, but you don't connect to them like you do in basketball. Number one, they don't play as many games. Everybody understands that. But you see the football numbers, and 24/7 has done a really good job putting the football numbers together over like the last three seasons. And the football numbers percentage-wise are really, really interesting. Now, these are players to transfer from ACC programs, top seven since 2019. Now, those numbers, Pac, when you think of 85 scholarships, those are not staggering numbers, but yet they look pretty big on paper, don't they?
Yeah, correct. I mean, basketball's numbers are going to be more significant, I think, based on the fact that you're talking about the number of scholarships versus, like you said, carrying 85 for a football program. And even once you get past the top seven here and go to the next lot of the ACC, I mean, the numbers go into the 40s, which you'll see here. Virginia Tech, North
there's
Carolina.
There's the bottom seven.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are some big numbers now. And I know coaching changes. A lot of times a new coach comes in and kind of weeds through and says, hey, listen, there's some guys here that really don't fit to my standards. I get it. It's all part of business. But those are some big, big numbers. And the ACC is no different than anybody else around the country. And that's what's going on right now in the world of college athletics.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting to see how this is just unfolding. But I think the concern in basketball, I'm going to come back to basketball here before we get to the break and Andy Staples in just a moment. The basketball concern is this. In this league specifically, you've had programs that have been legacy programs for generations, right? And there are a lot of them. And now all of a sudden, some percentage of those particular fan bases packed have kind of been turned upside down by this. All of this is kind of, I don't want to say caught them by surprise, but I don't think the regular fan thought it was going to be as volatile as it's been this year. And now all of a sudden the concern is, who's on my team? And they've never in their wildest dreams thought that was going to be an issue.
Fans for sure. And I think there's even some coaches that thought it would be this crazy.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger concern in some respects because that coach is getting paid to put together a program and have a product in which fans want to see. And so, you know, this is a tightrope act here. And, you know, that's why I kidded around a couple weeks ago with this transfer portal. I'm going to assume they're all gone. You know, in October, November, hand me what your roster looks like, and then we'll try to decide good, bad, or indifferent what we expect of teams. And that's hard to ask for a fan base to sit there and say, hey, listen, I'm loyal, I'm supportive, I want us to be great, but who's my team? Yeah. What am I rooting for here? It's a crazy world. And like I said, it's a total change of the landscape in college athletics. We are in the midst of it, unlike anything we've ever seen before.
All right, more to come on the transfer portal. We'll hit it again later in the show. There's some other issues and notes about it we want to share with you. But when we come back at the bottom of the hour, the victorious coach of the Garnet and Gold game will join us, Pac.
Co-victorious coach.
Co-coach.
Don't forget about Andrea. I talked to her yesterday.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
All right, it's time to bring on Andy Staples, who was already 1-0 as a head coach, along with Andrea Adelson, as they rolled into Tallahassee. A bunch of Gators rolled in there calling the game-winning play. Coach Staples, good morning.
What was that?
How are you?
Good. Now, Andrea's the head coach, let's be honest. So when we worked together at the school paper, she was the sports editor. I was the assistant sports editor. So I'm just a coordinator. I'm just serving.
Let me tell you something. I'm glad you said that because Andrea was on off campus with me yesterday. And we were talking about this and she said, I said, so what's it like being the head coach? And she goes, oh, you're right, Peck. I am the head coach. And she emphasized, you know, Staples worked for me at the University of Florida. So she laid it out there. She goes, I'll give him some credit for the game-winning call, even though Mackenzie Milton was the one that was really kind of spearheading us there. So
it was all Mackenzie Milton on the touchdown. I can take no credit. Mackenzie Milton looked at our call sheet for 5 seconds and goes, here are your three best plays. If you hit anything with any of these, immediately follow it up with this one, and he points at it. And that's exactly how I called one of the three.
That's it.
And it gained 14 yards. I followed with the one he told us to follow with, touchdown. Thank you, McKenzie.
Here's the funny thing. Andrea has already alerted me. I told her I was going to tell you this morning. Andrea said, well, you tell Andy I've already received an invite to being a coach for 22. I said, you're already in demand.
Oh.
I said, so I will pass that on to Andy Staples. I said, I don't know what Andy's schedule is, but I will alert him that you are already in demand at 1-0. So I'm just passing that along.
I'm excited. I'm ready.
Yeah. I want to ask you, Gene Deckerhoff and Jeff Cameron were on the other sideline, right? Is that who your formidable opponents were in the game, right, in terms of coaching?
I mean, are we using the word formidable? You saw what happened,
but nonetheless.
Right?
So, yeah, I did see what happened. But here's the idea. So if Florida State is going to not bring Gene and Jeff back because they were not victorious, but you and Andrea come back, that means they'll be looking for Coach Packer on the other sideline potentially.
Yeah, well, Packer and Durham. I like the Packer and Durham tandem. I would love going head-to-head with you guys and seeing which 18-year-old blows the first assignment and makes us look like either geniuses or idiots.
I will there be the go. One okay. with ribs, Andy. I will have spare ribs and some chicken wings. That would be me. And by the way, no disrespect to Jeff Cameron. Here's just a suggestion. Next year before the game, don't go on Twitter and show your play sheet. Probably not a good idea. That's just me to you.
Here's a better one. Make sure your opponent flips his channel from offense to defense before you start calling plays.
That's, yeah, there you go. That works.
They might have been calling plays a little early, and I might have heard them.
Okay, there you go. That's great. Love it.
Andy, you have put this story together for The Athletic, and it was ironic because I heard you last week on satellite talking about, you know, you were going to throw on the first down of the last possession because of the percentages in a piece that you were in the process of writing, and here it is. The value of throwing the ball statistically just gives you a better chance. I mean, I want to summarize here briefly, but tell me what you learned by writing this piece about starting possessions with a pass.
It's really interesting, and I did it because I was talking to Kevin Kelly, who's that high school coach in Arkansas who doesn't punt, and I had asked him, you know, what are some of the things you found with your team statistically that are interesting? And he said, well, I realized that we have this absurd touchdown percentage on drives where we gain more than 4 yards on the first play of the drive, not just first downs, but the first play. And he said, so, you know, you think a 4-yard run is really good. A 4-yard pass is kind of eh. So why would I run? Because I can get the pass pretty much every time and get the yardage I need. And so he's essentially eliminated running on the first play of the drive. And I thought, okay, this is interesting. Let's see how that translate to the FBS level. And we looked at the numbers and it was really interesting. So if you gain 5 or more yards on a pass play on your first play of the drive, you score 37.9% of the time, which that's really good. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. But the more interesting one was if you don't gain any yards or you gain fewer than 5 yards. So let's say you either throw an incomplete pass, which is a really short pass, on the first play of a drive, you score a touchdown 21% of the time. If you run for 5 or fewer yards on the first play of a drive, you score a touchdown 22% of the time. So a 5-yard run and an incomplete pass are essentially the same thing. And a 5-yard run is really good. So that's the thing that, that makes you think, okay, maybe you do need to be throwing more, but only 28 out of the 130 FBS teams over the last 2 years have thrown more than they've run on the first play of a drive.
By the way, as soon as you finished the piece and I read it, the first thing that popped in my head was Steve Spurrier reading it going, what took you boys so long? I've been trying to tell y'all this for 30 years. Man, we're going to toss that thing all over the yard.
Listen, there, yeah, but there were a lot of 12 blasts coming out on the first play of the drive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that coach was still, you know, this was the 90s were a long time ago.
Right.
But what's interesting, and I called Phil Longo from North Carolina about this story because – they had just a crazy split of how much they gained when they threw on first down last year versus how much they gained when they ran on first down. They gained like 16.7 yards every time they threw on first down, and that includes incompletions. They gained 6.3 yards every time they ran. But Phil was really interesting because this sort of changed the way I was thinking about it, because I was saying, hey, why are you not throwing? Why would you even bother running? Now, North Carolina runs more than they throw on the first play of the drive. And Phil explained his play calling philosophy is basically like Bruce Lee. And I was like, what does that mean? He said, what's the most famous thing Bruce Lee ever said? And that was be water, my friend. And basically that means be fluid, go to the path of least resistance, take what your opponent's going to give you. And when you have an offense like North Carolina's, which is very RPO based, you've essentially called a run and a pass on the same play. So really it's up to Sam Howell to diagnose what he's looking at, and that's post-snap, and decide whether you let the running back keep it or whether you throw it. And so as I looked at the numbers, it made sense. North Carolina's numbers on throwing and passing went up in 2020 relative to 2019 because Sam Howell got better at making that decision. And once he did, he was going to pick the play that worked every time, and you saw the results.
Andy, do you think that we are headed into a new age of college football in terms of, I mean, and let's get the West Coast and the BYU and the Washington State, Jack Thompson and all that stuff out of here. We're talking about RPO-based passing. We're talking about the combination game. Do you think we're headed to even like another level with that?
I think everybody's going to be on board with RPOs before long. And everybody has them to some extent, but I think they're just going to get more and more popular because the way the rules work, and you've heard Nick Saban talk about that this offseason, it's so tilted toward the offense. Why wouldn't you give yourself the option to run or throw on every play? Why wouldn't you give your quarterback the option to figure out what the defense is doing and how many, you know, what resources they're dedicating to stopping the run and what they're dedicating to stopping the pass before he makes the decision to throw or run it? I mean, I think that just makes sense. And, you know, that's where that comes in is, you know, if that quarterback takes a snap and he sees 8 guys drop, you're just letting the back take it. Those are free yards essentially. So ignore what Uncle Andy wrote about you have to throw in that case. If the defense drops 8, take the yards. And that's what Phil Longo and I were talking about. You know, they had 2 games last year where they were just unstoppable on the ground. They played Virginia Tech and Miami. They averaged 9-something a carry against Virginia Tech, 10-something against Miami. Well, you should never throw if you're doing that. Just run it. So I think and this is what I love about Phil Longo. He's a do what works guy and keep doing what works. Like against Miami, he just kept running the same thing over and over. And he's like, if they're not going to stop it, I'm going to keep running it. And I think that's where that more than anything is where offensive coordinators and play callers kind of get out of sorts is they say, well, I have to do this. I have to establish the run. This is who we are. We have to be this. No, just do the thing that keeps working, whether that's running or passing. And I think that's the thing. But it's hard to do when you've been trained for years to say, oh, we must establish the run, or we're an air raid team. We got to throw it. You got to be more flexible.
Andy, let's also talk about recruiting here a little bit, too. I mean, obviously, you got to have really good players to execute. I don't care what offense you're running. But as a guy that played on the line, you know, the NFL complains. I mean, the offensive linemen, they're in college, they just aren't ready for the way we play on Sunday. the way we're playing right now in college football, all this 7-on-7 you see in the summertime, man, guys want to throw and catch. You know, you can't necessarily sign great linemen just to line up and grind it, even if you wanted to play that way. So for the most part, you're going to get linemen that, hey, let me just get in somebody's way because we're going to toss this thing 50 times a game. Given your background in that perspective, how much of an impact does that have with the way we're now playing football where, hey, most schools can't sign five-star linemen. So you know what we can do? We can find guys that can pitch and catch. And so let's go do it.
Well, here's the thing. The ones who say that and say we can't sign five-star linemen, so we're just going to have an offense where they just get in the way. We're just going to run outside zone and inside zone and hope they get in somebody's way. They're doing themselves and their linemen a disservice. You can have great offensive linemen and run a really advanced offense that allows you to do all these things. And I think Oklahoma is a great example of that. You watch Oklahoma, they're running the old counter tray a bunch. Their guards and tackles could pull. They're very athletic. They're very technically sound. Bill Beedenbo is one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. You can do that and run one of those offenses. And then you get those guys in the NFL. Now, I would say the NFL is probably coming back toward college a little bit where they're running offenses that look a little bit more like college offenses. But the thing is, there will never be a time when having a great offensive line doesn't make you a much, much better team. So, you know, you still want guys who are, I mean, being athletic on the offensive line, especially with all the zone people are running, is critically important. I mean, you're asking centers to reach block guys that are, you know, lining up way away from them. And, you know, you want really good athletes on the line, but you also want guys who can win one-on-one matchups in the run game. It's not all going to be scheme based. If you've got, you know, a side of your offensive line that you could just cave in a defense, there's still a lot of value in that. So, you know, you can say, well, we can't get the five-star, and it's true. Most five-star, you know, ready to play offensive linemen are going to go to a few schools. They're going to go to Ohio State. They're going to go to Alabama. They're going to go to LSU, Georgia, Clemson. That's kind of it. But that doesn't mean you can't coach them really well and have a really good offensive line that gets you an extra 3 yards on a play that would have gained five. And I still think eight's better than five. So you go coach those guys up and make them technically sound, teach them all the things you would have taught them 20, 30 years ago. You'll still have a better offensive line.
All right, Andy, as much as you kind of dive into numbers and analytics of football, and we talked about Carolina and what Phil Longo does, and I think we all believe Carolina is kind of going to be that kind of team again this year. You see anybody else in the ACC maybe that could take that step forward with the pass reliancy that we're talking about?
Well, I'm interested in Miami because I think that's a team that they were adjusting to running that kind of offense last year. And now they know what they're doing. All the players know what they're doing. You know, Derek King was familiar with those concepts when he got there. We'll see how he heals up from his injury. But I think being in the second year of that kind of offense, they're going to be so much smoother. It's going to be so much more second nature to them. And I think that'll help. Now, here's the thing. You can't be over-reliant on the pass. I mean, watching Miami against Clemson, it was basically as if they'd looked at the tape and said, I don't think we can run against these guys. And you still have to try to run a little bit. You still have to have that as a potential punishment for the defense if they drop too many guys. And that's the part I try to explain to people. Like, I write this story saying you should throw on the first play of the drive. That doesn't mean you should never run. It also doesn't mean you should never not run on the first play of the drive, because you want to have that as a tendency breaker, as a way to tell the defense, hey, you still have to play us honestly. And so I think Miami, as they develop as an offense, will be even tougher to stop now that everybody understands how all that works.
Can't wait for football, boys and
Andy
girls.
Andy Staples.
Yep.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, we're in May and already pumped, right? I mean, start thinking about some of these wrinkles.
We were talking a year ago about whether or not there was going to be a season, and we talked about that for months. There's going to be a season. It's going to be awesome.
Amen. Knock on wood.
It is. And we're going to have traffic and tailgates and everything, right, Pac? We're
going
to have traffic.
Exactly,
we're
going
to have to worry about all sorts of stuff. Andy, great to
but
see you.
Have
be
ribs
well.
And chicken
Always
wings.
A fun visit.
on the sideline.
Yeah.
Next spring.
That's spring game. Yeah, you got that right. We're going to have like Andy with a grill in the end zone. And, oh, we're going to call plays? Okay, we're going to get the ribs and chicken.
We can I would actually call plays while flipping meat.
That is the way to roll, right there.
That's a Packer. You and Packer in that contest.
I tell you now, listen, Andy and I are foodies. Let me tell you, we could tag team and
yes,
be dangerous with the grill and come into your city to partake with some grub. We can do that now. That can happen.
There we go.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Andy Staples, always a great read on The Athletic. Loves his college football and knows it. And knows food, too. It's a good combination. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Quarterbacks. The league is loaded again, Mr. Durham. Last year, I thought it was a strength of the conference. And I think it will be again this season, especially when you look at experience, who's coming back. You mentioned the quote of 13 of 14 quarterbacks gotten at least a start and then some heading into the 21 campaign. It all starts. You got to have a quarterback. If you don't, I think there's a ceiling on the kind of season you can have. And I think that's one of the things that people be optimistic about ACC football in 21.
You remember when we had that quarterback cycle conversation a few years ago, right? When Deshaun Watson and then you had the little dip afterwards and then the ACC's come back and you're kind of thinking, well, wait a second. They were pretty good at quarterback last year. I'm not saying it'll be a lot better, but it's got a chance to be significantly better. Packed with 13 of 14 guys back. Gunnar Holmberg at Duke is a guy who Roddy and I saw 3-4 weeks ago in the spring scrimmage, and got to be honest with you, I thought he did some good things. Now, is it a finished product? Absolutely not. We know Sam Howell is good, right? We know De'Eric King is good. I'm fascinated about Florida State. Mark, I don't know where you are after watching the Garnet and Gold game. I'm completely into how Mike Norvell and Kenny Dillingham go about making this decision with Mackenzie Milton, Jordan Travis, Tate Rodemaker, Chuba Purdy. I mean, how does it work? I mean, how do you take the four guys and get it to one, maybe two? Does it end up being a combination of Travis and Milton? I guess they've learned you can never have enough down there through injuries and other things, but I'm completely kind of caught up in which way do they go? Because I thought Travis and Milton both showed me some stuff in the spring game.
Well, you open with Notre Dame. The week one games for the ACC and non-conference play are out of sight.
So don't tell anybody.
I wouldn't say a word. If I was Mike Norvell, take the Mark Packer plan and go, oh, you want to know who my quarterback is? Cool. I'll tell you when you're going to find out. Under the lights.
Yeah.
When we open up against the Irish. That's when you're going to find out who my starting quarterback is. But I think, I think Florida State's quarterback room is fine. I don't have the issue there. Mm-hmm. What I need to see is their offensive line, right? I mean, can they keep guys upright? Can they create some plays so the Mackenzie Miltons or Jordan Travis or fill in the blank can go make some plays? I don't think Florida State's quarterback room is an issue. And if you watch the Miami spring game this week and on here on ACC Network on Saturday morning, De'Eric King, you know he's a baller, and you're like, man, I hope he's back for the Alabama game. Yeah, me too. But you know what? You saw some young talent on the field Saturday where you went, wow, now that Kane's quarterback room looks pretty good. So I think most coaches in this league are going to feel really good about their quarterback room. And, yeah, you always want depth. That's one thing you strive for regardless of what position we're talking about. But I think the collection of quarterbacks in this league – now, granted, Notre Dame's not a conference member, so you'll lose Notre Dame and Ian Book and Notre Dame and Brian Kelly have to figure that thing out as they open up at Florida State. But everybody in this league from a year ago, for the most part, is going to look and say, you know what, I don't have to tell you who my starter is, but I feel good about my starter, and I feel good about what we've got at quarterback, dudes who can go make plays. And to me, that's an encouraging sign if you're a fan of ACC football.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.